Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
On March 29, 1989, a young mother met some new friends to go shopping. She had planned on leaving her children with her sister-in-law for the afternoon, but when they arrived, the women told her that she should bring her six-week-old baby, Andre, along. Monique Rivera agreed and went back inside to get her youngest son. That was the last time Monique and Andre were seen alive. While the ensuing investigation uncovered devastating answers, so many more questions remain. Who were the two women who came to Monique's Brooklyn, New York apartment that day? Was what happened related to other abductions of Black children in New York City that year? And most importantly, where is Andre Bryant? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Andre Bryant. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Happy New Year, everyone. I know it's mid-January, but this is the first episode of 2026 for us.
Happy New Year.
It's also our first episode of season 7. I can't believe we've been doing this for so long.
It's unreal.
So we want to thank everyone who's listening right now, both the new listeners and the ones who have been here for years. We appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you so much for allowing us to continue to do this. I wanted to start out season 7 with a case that needs more attention. It took place in 1989, but as you'll hear, there are a lot of people involved, meaning that there's potentially a large pool of people who could have information about some of the folks or the events in this case. One thing that struck me as I was researching this is that there really hasn't been much written about it in the past 5 years or so. So I'm hoping that we can help get the story back out there a little bit, because not only is this case solvable, but I believe that Andre Bryant could still be out there with potentially no idea who he is and no idea that people have been looking for him for nearly 37 years.
Which is a terrifying thought.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there have been similar stories to this one that have had happy endings, so I'd like to think that this is one of those. Before we get started, though, we've had some new folks join us over on Patreon. So we want to take a moment to thank Jessica H., John Y., Amy W., and Vanessa M. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you all so much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to get these episodes without all the ads, you can join them at any level, starting at just $2 a month on Patreon. You'll also get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So with all of that finished, let's get into the story of Andre Bryant. Andre Terrence Bryant was born on February 17, 1989, to Monique Rivera and Timothy Bryant. He was the youngest of three children and had two older brothers, 7-year-old Timmy and 4-year-old Thomas. While his parents were both in their early 20s and unmarried, they had been together since they were teenagers and made a loving, stable home for Andre and his brothers in their Madison Street apartment in Bushwick, a working-class neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York. On Tuesday, March 28, 1989, Monique decided to take the boys out for a walk in the neighborhood. As she strolled with her children near their home, a car pulled up alongside them. Inside were two women who seemed to recognize Monique. They waved her over, and Monique realized she did know one of them, or at least she thought she did. Monique's sister-in-law, Patricia Bryant, later told reporters that Monique had told her that the younger of the two women was someone she used to go to school with. And I've seen different reports, some saying that they went to middle school together, others that they went to high school together. But
regardless,
something like that. Yeah. The older woman was described as a heavyset Black woman around 30 to 35 years old with a dark complexion and sunglasses. The other, the one who Monique remembered from school, was a younger woman, either Black or Latina, about 22 to 25, with a light complexion and distinctive long red or orangey hair. Both were roughly 5'7". They drove a burgundy Pontiac Grand Am with tinted windows. It was a 1988 or 1989 car that Monique's little son Timmy even noticed had out-of-state license plates, possibly from Maryland.
Oh, interesting.
The women chatted with Monique on the sidewalk and made a fuss over baby Andre. Monique later told Patricia that during the conversation, quote, the women kept saying, let me see the baby, let me hold the baby, end quote. The women told Monique that they were heading to lunch at McDonald's and asked her if she and the kids would like to come along. Monique agreed and bundled her boys into the back seat of the Pontiac and headed to lunch. At McDonald's, the women continued doting on six-week-old Andre. They took turns holding the baby in their arms, fussing over him and complimenting Monique on her beautiful son, while the older boys ate their Happy Meals. After lunch, the women told Monique that they were planning to go on a shopping spree and wanted to hit up some clothing stores. But this wasn't just a normal shopping trip. According to what Monique later told Patricia, the women were running a credit card scam.
Okay.
Patricia told Newsday that the older woman, quote, got this thing going where she makes these credit cards and she can just buy one thing on it and then she has to tear it up, end quote.
Hmm.
Monique hesitated at first, but the women were persuasive and ultimately Monique went along. The group headed out to Green Acres Mall, which was a shopping center in Valley Stream, Long Island. At a clothing store called Canadians, Monique picked out a new outfit for herself. By late afternoon, the outing wound down and the women drove Monique and the kids back home to Brooklyn. When her boyfriend Timothy got home from work, he noticed the bag of new clothes and was immediately suspicious of the entire situation. He later told Newsday, quote, I said, well, why do you need anybody to buy you anything? I'd just gotten home and I'd had a drink and I was tired, so I said, I just want to eat my dinner and go to bed. So that's what I did, end quote. He later told the New York Times that he had been upset with his wife when she showed him the new outfit, saying, quote, I don't think it was right. I don't think it was right because nobody gives you anything for nothing, end quote.
Did he know about the credit card scam at this
point? Yeah, I think she told him.
Okay.
He asked Monique who these women were and why they were being so generous. Monique reassured him that one of the women was an old school friend and she seemed to genuinely trust them. But instead of placating him, Timothy's concern only grew when Monique mentioned the women's plans for another shopping trip.
Okay.
They had invited her to go to the Westchester Galleria Mall in White Plains the next day on March 29th. The plan was to have Timothy's sister, Patricia Bryant, watch the kids while Monique went to the mall. Patricia arrived at the apartment to babysit, and sometime around 2 p.m., the two women from the day before made contact. But they didn't do it in a normal way. They used a payphone around the corner to call and ask Monique to meet them outside, instead of just pulling up outside and or coming to her door. Undeterred, Monique headed out, but when she got to the sidewalk, the women immediately asked her to go back in and get Andre, because they wanted him to come along on the shopping trip. Now, this may seem like a red flag, because it is.
Sure, but we're also, you know, it's also hindsight after potential kidnapping.
Yes, but that's still weird, you know? Like, she has three kids, they're going shopping, why would you want to bring a six-week-old baby along?
I mean, I don't, maybe he was cute. I don't know.
He was cute. He definitely was cute. And, you know, maybe that's just what Monique think, because she didn't see this as a red flag. According to her mother, Rosemary Rivera, she was sweet and trusting and not streetwise in any sense of the word. She trusted these women. If they wanted baby Andre to join, so be it. So Monique went back inside the apartment and told Patricia that the ladies had specifically invited Andre, and so she was going to take him and leave the older boys with Patricia. So with that, Monique carried Andre out of the apartment and climbed into the burgundy Pontiac with the two women. The car pulled away from Madison Street and disappeared down the road, and none of Monique's family or friends would ever see her or Andre alive again. That evening, as hours ticked by with no word from Monique, her family's concern skyrocketed. Monique was a responsible mother, and it was entirely out of character of her to stay out into the night without checking in. By 10 p.m., she had still not returned home. Timothy called Monique's mother, hoping that maybe she had decided to go there after shopping, but Rosemary told him she hadn't seen Monique or the baby. She was talking to a reporter, and the quote was something like, "No, she's like, it's 10 o'clock. Why would she be here, you know?"
Yeah.
And so it was in that moment that they all knew something was terribly wrong. Timothy immediately contacted the New York City Police Department to report his wife and baby son missing. Monique's loved ones spent a sleepless night praying for her safe return, but it wasn't to be. Chronological age is your birthday. Biological age is how old your body really is, and it's the strongest indicator of disease risk and mortality. The True Age and True Health Combo Kit measures biological age versus chronological age and your current pace of aging. I've been using True Diagnostic for a while, and it's been so interesting to me to get the data that normal blood work just doesn't cover. My true age is pretty close to my chronological age, but there's always room for improvement. TrueAge tracks the health of 11 organ systems, including your heart, brain, and lungs. TrueHealth checks over 105 vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and other health markers. But best of all, if you get the combo kit, it gives you 3 aging actions and 3 health actions to work on each quarter. So it gives you goals that you can actually achieve to improve your health. You order online, the kit ships right to your door. It's a quick, simple finger prick at home, and then you just drop it in the prepaid return package. You just follow the recommendations for the 90 days and then you retest to see your progress. It uses advanced epigenetic testing to analyze over 1 million biomarkers. It's trusted by top longevity clinics and health professionals, not just consumers at home. And right now, my listeners can get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using code ATTWG20 at checkout. That's truediagnostic.com and use code ATTWG20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or a subscription. If you've been listening to this show for a while, then you know that I'm a podcaster and a realtor. And on some days, like today, I have to do both. I spent all day in a courthouse watching a trial that we're covering, and then I had to drive an hour and a half away to put a lockbox on a new listing. It was a long day, to say the least, and normally I would have been exhausted at about 3 when I still had several hours to go. But I've recently been adding everyday dose into my morning routine, specifically into my morning coffee. And let me tell you, I was driving home late tonight and I felt great. Everyday dose is coffee plus benefits. They combine high quality coffee with powerful ingredients like lion's mane and chaga, collagen protein, and nootropics to fuel your brain, boost focus, and give you clean, sustained energy all day long. It tastes just like coffee without the downside. No crash, no jitters, just clean, sustained energy. Right now for Black Friday, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/ATTWG or use code ATTWG at checkout. Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. These are functional gummies that are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. I am not surprised to learn that their Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies are their current bestseller, because let me tell you, those things work. And I've tried everything, and these get me to sleep, keep me asleep without feeling groggy the next morning. They also have CBD gummies for gentle relaxation and pain relief, or even mind magic gummies for deep work and enhanced creativity. And everything just ships discreetly right to your door. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let them help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code ATTWG when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at Mood.com. The following morning, March 30th, 1989, brought devastating news. In the Bronx, a man jogging along City Island Road made a horrifying discovery. At the bottom of a wooded embankment near the Eastchester Bay Inlet, about 30 feet from the road, he saw the body of a young woman. She was fully clothed and appeared to have been dumped down the brushy slope. Police from the Bronx's 45th Precinct responded and noted signs of foul play. The woman had been bludgeoned in the head and then strangled with a scarf that she had been wearing. Her arms were covered with dark bruises and her fingernails were broken. It was clear to investigators that this woman had been in a violent struggle. No identification or purse was found with the body, so the NYPD didn't immediately know her name. Responding officers didn't understand the significance of this at the time, but the woman's body was also there alone. There was no sign of a baby anywhere around her. Back in Brooklyn, Monique's family was still anxiously awaiting any word. That same day, March 30th, Timothy Bryant placed a notice in a local Sunday newspaper's classified section asking for information on Monique and Andre's whereabouts. This was the pre-internet era, and newspaper ads like these were a way that families would try to shake information loose in these situations. So it took a few days, but it worked. Timothy's missing persons notice ran in the paper on Sunday, April 2nd, 1989. By pure happenstance, a detective in the Bronx saw the ad describing Monique and Andre and realized that the description of Monique matched that of the Jane Doe found at City Island Road.
At this point, I guess the Brooklyn NYPD hadn't shared anything with the rest of NYPD.
Well, I'm sure that it was put out there, right? You know, like, I don't know exactly how it works, but I'm sure, especially not in 1989.
Yeah, right.
You know, but there probably were like a stack of daily faxes, right? Saying, hey, this is what's going on in our precinct, like be on the lookout kind of thing. So I'm sure that the information had been disseminated in some way. But I don't know how many
as widespread as it can be now.
Right. So I don't know how many detectives in other precincts would have necessarily seen the notices, been completely aware of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just not sure how far that really would have gotten by that point, because we're really only talking a couple of days at this, you know, like 2-3 days since the body had been found.
But regardless, NYPD in the Brooklyn precinct is doing something, right? They didn't just brush her off and say, oh, well, she's an adult.
No, they were
definitely...
They took
it seriously because of the baby.
Because of the baby,
right.
Exactly. Because it was the mom and the baby. And you know, she didn't have any previous problems with the police or anything like that. So, yeah, like, they were taking it seriously. But when that body turned up in the Bronx, the two, you know, boroughs just didn't really connect on that. So it was lucky that that one detective just happened to be reading the classified section in the paper.
Yeah, that's...
And saw the notice and, like, and then put the pieces together.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So investigators ended up comparing the details and began to strongly suspect the worst, that the murdered woman in the Bronx was Monique Rivera. Timothy Bryant was brought in to officially identify her body, and he confirmed it was Monique. But of course, Monique's family couldn't even properly grieve for her because there was still one major question. Where's Andre? The baby boy was now missing and endangered. Police immediately launched an intensive search for the infant. Divers even plunged into the waters off of City Island, searching for any sign of Andre's tiny body in case he had been dumped in the bay. They scoured the shoreline and surrounding brush as well, but nothing turned up. It was beginning to seem as though Monique had been dumped there, but Andre had perhaps been taken alive. Detectives suspected that Andre Bryant was the true target of this crime. The very fact that the two mysterious women had insisted that Monique bring the baby on March 29th, when she'd already been planning on leaving him at home, indicated a premeditated interest in the infant. It looked like a classic trap. Lure the mother, get her to bring the baby, then separate the baby from the mother. The evidence was pointing to Monique refusing to hand over Andre. She had numerous defensive wounds, including bruises and broken nails, that showed she fought for that baby, as her family later put it. Investigators theorized that when Monique resisted whatever the kidnapper's plan was, that they murdered her in order to take Andre. But who were these two women who had so confidently approached Monique in broad daylight and orchestrated this plan? In the days and weeks after the murder, police worked to identify the suspects. Fortunately, they had pretty detailed descriptions from Monique's family and possibly from other witnesses who might have seen the burgundy Pontiac in the area.
The kids didn't remember hearing either of their names when they were at McDonald's?
No, I don't think the kids remember their names, but I think the kids were kind of able to tell them what they looked like, tell them about how they, you know, went to McDonald's and all that kind of stuff. And like I said, her one son even noticed that it was an out-of-state license plate. But even more concerning, Timmy Jr. also remembered seeing what looked like a handgun on the car's floorboard.
Mm.
But interesting, Monique wasn't killed with a gun. Yeah. Investigators ran checks of Pontiac Grand Dams and any vehicles matching that description with out-of-state plates. Unfortunately, these leads did not immediately pan out. No one could locate the mysterious burgundy car or the two women. They had vanished without a trace, along with Andre. However, a bizarre clue surfaced 2 days after Monique's body was identified. On April 4th, 1989, a call came in to Monique and Timothy's apartment. The caller was a woman who gave her name as Joan Walker. Joan asked to speak with Monique, and Monique's mother told her that Monique had been killed. The woman on the line seemed shocked. She said something along the lines of, quote, "Monique can't be dead. I was just shopping with her the last 2 days," end quote.
So now one of these alleged women, how did they get her? Oh, no.
Her apartment. Her mom was just there.
Got it.
And answered the phone.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's weird. So apparently her mom asked this lady, Joan, for her address. I don't really know why. Every news article just said that Joan gave her address, but whenever police looked into it, the address, quote, did not check out, end quote. At the time, though, it was one of the best clues that they had, but unfortunately, authorities were never able to trace her identity or apparently the phone number. Police were torn on whether Joan Walker was one of the two suspects or maybe a third accomplice who had been involved peripherally. If it was one of the two women, her phone call could have been an attempt to see what was known about the case, or maybe it was panic or remorse. Some investigators theorized that if Joan was one of the pair, maybe she herself didn't participate in Monique's murder and was genuinely surprised and upset to learn that Monique was dead. Of course, it could have also just been a terrible prank. You know, we've covered a lot of cases, unfortunately, in which the loved ones of a missing person have gotten these like terrible prank calls.
Yeah, but I mean, specifically saying that they had been shopping the last two days.
Yeah, I agree. But to this day, we don't really know the significance of the Joan Walker call. As the investigation went on, investigators had to look at people other than these two mysterious women. They also had to ask if someone Monique knew harbored resentment toward her or if they had had a motive to steal her baby. Monique's husband, Timothy, and other family were looked into, but there was no evidence that anybody like that was involved. Timothy had an alibi, and he was the one who, you know, called police immediately to report her missing. So while I haven't seen that anyone was officially cleared by investigators, detectives' attention turned back to the two women.
I'd be curious to know if NYPD looked at like her high school or maybe they didn't have a middle school yearbook, but a yearbook.
I know. That was my question, too. Yeah. Like, did she go to school with anybody named Joan Walker or Joan at all?
Yeah.
Or, you know, again, even just going through the yearbooks, trying to find somebody who matched the description of the younger woman.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't seen any detail into that, but like, I yeah, you're right. I would hope so. Because that would have been my first move.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially if they had gone to high school together, like they were only like 22. I mean, they wouldn't have looked that different probably. So I think it would have been relatively easy to, you know, potentially identify her, or at least like grab, you know, a handful of people from the yearbook who could potentially be her and then track them down.
Right.
So while investigators were looking into these two women, they had to kind of think about a motive. And so one of the theories was the possibility of a black market baby scheme. In the 80s, there had been headlines about infants being stolen and sold or raised by kidnappers, though, of course, it was and is extremely rare. The brutality of Monique's murder suggested to police that Andre's abductors were desperate to have a baby. However, they also noted that infant boys, especially black infants, were not difficult to adopt through legal means, which somewhat kind of undercut the idea of a lucrative baby selling market for an African-American newborn. However, investigators couldn't ignore that Andre wasn't the only black baby boy who had gone missing in New York City. In fact, multiple young children vanished around the same time under strange circumstances. NYPD Inspector Ken Lindell later recalled the prevailing thought that maybe it wasn't a black market adoption ring, but perhaps people who couldn't have children were snatching kids to raise as their own. In Monique and Andre's case, one theory was that the two women intended to pass Andre off as one of their own children. Or there's the possibility that this was all related to the credit card scheme. Investigators floated the idea that the two women wanted Andre as a prop. This theory is based on the idea that women carrying an infant might draw less suspicion from store clerks while using stolen credit cards.
Hmm. But to go through the trouble of murder?
Exactly. Exactly. Because, like, the idea is that maybe people would be more lenient or distracted by a cute baby, which I think does make sense on some level. But yeah, like, if that's actually the motive, it means that these two women or other people associated with them were willing to brutally murder a mother and kidnap a baby with the end goal of buying new clothes, apparently.
Yeah, that seems a little far-fetched.
Yeah, because it seems like a pretty low-level scam.
Yeah, and if you wanted that cover, just invite Monica out more.
Exactly. Like, buy her some clothes, too, and I'm sure she would have just come and hung out.
Right.
And brought Andre.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't need to do all that.
Right. I think that's kind of
a
stretch.
But, you know, yeah, of course. But everything's just a theory because no witnesses reported seeing what happened to Monique and Andre after they drove off on March 29th. Aside from the phone call from Joan, there were no known communications from the kidnappers. And of course, forensic evidence was also limited. Monique's body had been left in a location with no surveillance or witnesses. And if any fingerprints or DNA were on her clothing or body, it was 1989 and technology just wasn't what it is today. DNA profiling was in its infancy, and there's no indication that the case yielded any usable forensic clues back then. So, you know, we think that investigators would have collected fibers or maybe hair or, you know, things like that. But I haven't seen any sources that have said what specifically had been collected. By the summer of 1989, after months of investigation, the trail was cold. That July, a Daily News article titled "Hope Fades for Andre's Return" reported that despite exhaustive efforts, including even consulting psychics, that there were no solid leads on Andre's whereabouts. The two women seemed to have evaporated, and no infants of unknown origin had turned up in hospitals or public assistance records that matched Andre's description. Okay, so what about those other missing babies I mentioned?
Yeah.
If you've watched the reboot of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix, this might sound familiar. In the span of just a few months in 1989, two other young Black children vanished without a trace in New York City. But unlike Andre, these cases did not involve a murdered parent. They were just straight-up kidnappings of toddlers in public places. It was still in New York City. They were all Black boys under the age of three, so investigators had to look at whether or not these cases were linked. And they began asking, could there be a ring of child abductors operating in the city?
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offering, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-FOR Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The first of these cases occurred just weeks after Andre was taken. On May 18, 1989, a two-year-old boy named Christopher Dansby vanished from a playground in Harlem. Christopher's mother, 26-year-old Allison Dansby, had taken him and his older brother to the Martin Luther King Jr. Towers playground on 114th Street and Lenox Avenue, where they lived. Around 7 p.m., Allison stepped away briefly to buy food at a nearby store, leaving Christopher at the playground with relatives. In that window of maybe 30 minutes, little Choo Choo, as she called Christopher, disappeared. When Allison returned, he was simply gone. Panicked searches of the playground and surrounding streets yielded nothing. Witnesses later recalled that shortly before he went missing, Christopher had been playing with a couple of other children. Specifically, a 10-year-old girl and her 6-year-old brother who frequented the park. Those same two children would oddly figure into the next disappearance as well. That next abduction happened on August 10th, 1989, when a 19-month-old boy named Shane Walker also vanished from that same Harlem playground. Shane's mother, Rosa Glover, was sitting on a bench watching Shane when two kids, that same 10-year-old and her younger brother, approached and asked to play with her son. Rosa was initially hesitant, but ultimately allowed them to play with Shane for a bit. While the children played, an unrelated man struck up a conversation with Rosa on the bench, briefly distracting her.
Yeah, I was just going to say the distraction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In a matter of minutes, Rosa looked up to discover that she couldn't see Shane or the two older kids. Moments later, the 10-year-old girl and her brother reappeared outside the park fence without Shane. Rosa yelled, quote, "Where's my son?" end quote. And the kids casually said that Shane was still in the park, but he wasn't. Just like Christopher, Shane Walker had vanished into thin air.
So it was the prevailing thought there that these two kids, the design was for them to lure the other kids to a waiting kidnapper.
And yeah.
Then the random guy was the distraction to distract the mom.
Yeah, that was the theory. I mean, that was kind of what everybody was thinking. But the children and their family was interviewed at length, and police ultimately said that they didn't believe that the kids or their parents were involved in a kidnapping scheme. And I mean, I can get it because it's like that was their neighborhood playground. So maybe they just happened to be there both times.
But really, they happened to be there both times and they were talking to or playing with the
kids
that vanished.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is crazy because, yeah, the setup in both cases was really suspicious. It was the same two kids.
But this also is a different MO than what happened to Andre.
It is. It is.
So, I mean, yes, obviously you have to look at them to see, to make sure that they're not connected, or maybe think that they're connected. But the manner in which Andre was taken was so much different.
Yeah, and these two kids were toddlers. Andre was an infant. And also, yes, this is all New York City, but Harlem and Bushwick are very far apart in terms of the city. Like, these are not neighborhoods that are close to each other in any way.
Yeah, I don't know where Bushwick is.
Yeah, it's in Brooklyn, and it's, like, kind of deep in Brooklyn, you know? And then Harlem is toward the top of Manhattan,
right.
So they're not close. Despite immediate police response, including door-to-door searches of the housing complex and even divers checking a nearby pond, no trace of Christopher Dansby or Shane Walker was ever found, and they remain missing to this day. By late August 1989, with three young Black boys missing, the NYPD publicly acknowledged that they were investigating possible links between the cases. The media dubbed the mystery kidnapper the Pied Piper of Harlem, and the persistent theory was a black market adoption ring. But like you said, I mean, there were a lot of difference between those two cases, which had a lot of similarities to each other, and Andre's case.
Right.
Because in Andre's case, the two women directly targeted his mother.
Right.
Used extreme deception and then violence.
If they were the ones that kidnapped
right.
her.
Or yeah. Him. This was two women, whereas in the Harlem case, some witnesses reported seeing an unknown black man with dreadlocks and a noticeable facial scar loitering near the playground on the day that Christopher disappeared and carrying a child that fit his description. And while they are similar in that it does seem to all be cases of people who are kidnapping children to potentially raise as their own, everything else about the abductions were different.
Or it could have been that Andre was the first victim, and there was, what, 2 months in between?
Yeah.
Maybe they, whoever the kidnapper was, developed a better approach because the first one went so badly and he had to murder a woman.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. You're right. I mean, maybe they were just switching the MO on purpose.
Yeah.
So to this day, there's no official link between Andre Bryant's case and the Dansby Walker cases. It's certainly possible that more than one child abductor was active in New York in 1989. I mean,
for sure.
It was a city of millions of people. But it is possible, like you said, that it is the same people and they deliberately changed their MO because it went so badly. The lives of Andre Bryant's family, his father, his two older brothers, and his extended relatives were forever changed on that spring day in 1989. They suffered the devastating loss of Monique, a beloved daughter, sister, and mother of three. On top of that, they were left in limbo regarding Andre's fate. Monique was only 22 years old when she was killed, and she never got the chance to watch her children grow up. Her two surviving little boys had to grapple not only losing their mom, but also the baffling disappearance of their baby brother. Andre's father fell into profound grief. In the ensuing years, he raised Timmy Jr. and Thomas as a single father, all while nursing the hope that somehow Andre might still be alive. Every birthday, every holiday, there was a void. Timothy kept photographs of Monique and Andre, preserving their memory. He believed strongly that Andre had been taken for a purpose, possibly to be raised by someone else, and therefore might be alive. He told reporters, quote, "You've got to keep hope. You can't give up hope," end quote. And there is always reason to keep hope alive in cases like this. In 2011, Carlina White, a young woman who had been kidnapped as an infant from a Harlem hospital in 1987, was reunited with her biological parents 23 years later.
That's crazy.
And again, this was just 2 years earlier in Harlem. She got snatched right out of the hospital. Her story made national headlines and was later made into a Lifetime movie. Carlina had grown up not knowing her true identity until she discovered that she had been abducted as a baby. In January 2011, shortly after Carlina was reunited with her birth family, the New York Post ran a story about Timothy Bryant. The headline was Reunion Stirs Brooklyn Vanished Dad's Torment. The article described how seeing Carlina White's miraculous homecoming both inspired and pained Timothy. He took that moment to send a public message to his missing boy. Quote, Andre, you have a whole family waiting here for you. Come home, man. End quote. The fact that Carlina White had been raised under a different name and only realized the truth in adulthood gave him a tangible reason to hope that Andre was also out there somewhere living a normal life, unaware of what had happened to him as an infant. Monique's younger sister, Simone Rivera, was in her teens when Monique was killed. That loss and the mystery that followed profoundly affected her. In recent years, Simone has become vocal about the case. In 2017, she pushed the NYPD to re-examine the cold case. She had even been experiencing recurring dreams about Monique. In them, her sister would appear and ask, quote, Are you ready, Simone, to find out who did this to me? End quote. Simone's advocacy paid off. By mid-2017, the NYPD agreed to reopen Monique and Andre's cold case for review. The force's cold case squad began the process of locating old evidence from 1989, things like clothing, fingernail scrapings, and hair samples to see if modern DNA testing could yield new clues. Unfortunately, the last article I could find about this was in 2018, so I don't know to what extent any of the evidence was re-examined or if anything came of it.
Yeah, there might not have been any usable DNA.
Yeah, but I hate that, like, I don't know either way. You know, I wish they would just say that they have something or they don't. Despite the case being reopened, as of this writing, there have been no public breakthroughs. The NYPD hasn't announced any DNA matches or new leads. Andre Terrence Bryant remains listed as a missing person. Over the years, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has created age progression images to show what Andre might look like as he grows up. Andre would be 36 years old now, turning 37 in February 2026. There's a chance that he's lived an entire life not knowing his true name or parentage. If by some miracle he were to see his baby photos or news about himself and put the pieces together, his family wants him to know that they never stopped loving him or looking for him. I just hope that Andre's family has put their DNA into the public databases.
Right, yeah.
Because at this point, I mean, the random curiosity of a man who takes an ancestry test might be the quickest way to get this case solved. But I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that that was the plan, that these women targeted Monique to get her baby and raise him as their own or one of their own?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I mean, I think that there obviously had to be some level of targeting because one of them knew her.
I don't know. I honestly don't know if I'm completely sold on that.
Even though so you think that she convinced Monique?
Yeah, I think if it was especially somebody from middle school, which I did read in, you know, one of the early newspaper articles, I think it could have been like, oh, yeah, we went to middle school. We went to, you know, whatever middle school together. And Monique could have been like, oh, yeah, even though she didn't really remember her and just went along with it.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
But that would mean that the woman would still have had to have been targeting Monique because she would have at least had to have had that basic information.
Right.
Because there are, you know, New York is a very densely packed city. You can't just randomly guess necessarily what middle school somebody went to. You know, There are just too many. It's not like you're in a small town and there's only one.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, she might have known her from school, but like I could believe that she didn't.
The thing that troubles me is the thought that they were going to kidnap Andre to raise as their own. I don't know why. I don't feel like that was the motive. I think it was more along the lines of, let's get this baby for a underground kidnapping ring or something. It's easy for the police to say, yes, there's a lot of African-American babies that are available for adoption. But that's assuming that people are going to want to go through that process legally.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of hoops to jump through to get to the point where you can legally adopt. And if people have a criminal record, depending on what is on the criminal record, they may not be able to.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because I think especially with the credit card scam aspect of this, I can see it more as the baby wasn't going to be going to one of them. They were going to get money for delivering a baby to a third party.
Yeah. And I think Monique's murder was not planned.
Yeah.
The fact that they used her scarf that she had on
her
to strangle her shows that there wasn't forethought in planning any of this. And a blunt object striking her in the head, I mean, that could have been anything. That could have been a rock.
Yeah. Yeah. A rock from the scene or, you know, right. Yeah. You're right. It could have been anything. And she fought. Monique fought. She, you know, had broken fingernails and bruises. So again, it wasn't like they took her by surprise. You know, they didn't catch her off guard. They didn't drug her. They didn't do any of these things that would suggest planning or premeditation.
Right. And if Timmy Jr. was right, and there was a gun on the floorboard, like, again, there's an obvious murder weapon.
Yeah.
Right. So if they had planned on murdering Monique, you would think that they would have used the gun.
Right.
And not a rock and strangle her and get into a physical altercation with her when a gun provides you distance.
Yeah. No, you're right. And so, yeah, I'm wondering if it was those two women or if there was a third person who came in and that's who Monique was struggling with.
Could be.
Yeah.
I mean, it very well could have been the two women bringing the baby and Monique to this third person.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before, maybe that went so poorly, that's when they changed their tactics and they were involved in the other two kidnappings too.
And even though it was a man who was seen at Christopher's kidnapping, I mean, the third party that we're theoretically talking about here could have been the same man.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But yeah, of course, it's all unfortunately just speculation, and there just hasn't been enough physical evidence in any of the cases to move it forward beyond that. Monique and Andre's family, they're still going. Simone told reporters, quote, "We can't let this go until we have answers," end quote. Because even after more than three decades, they hold on to the hope that Andre might come home one day, or at least that they'll learn the truth of what happened on March 29th, 1989. When I was writing this, I kept thinking about Monique's final moments. She clearly realized what was at stake and fought with everything she had to protect her baby, and the wounds on her body showed that. It's been nearly 37 years since Andre Bryant was taken, but there could absolutely still be people out there who know what happened on March 29th, 1989. If anyone listening has information, even if you think it's insignificant, please remember that it could break this case open. It's never too late for justice or a reunion. Monique's story deserves an ending, and Andre deserves to know who he is. Until that day comes, the family will be waiting and keeping the faith. As Simone Rivera said, quote, "I won't rest until I find the truth," end quote. And neither will the rest of Monique and Andre's family. Andre Terrence Bryant has been missing from Brooklyn, New York since March 29th, 1989. He's a black male with black hair and brown eyes and was last seen wearing a gray suit with two horizontal red lines, a beige knitted hat and sweater, and white socks. He was just under 6 weeks old when he went missing. He would be 36 today. If you have any information on the disappearance of Andre Bryant, please contact the New York City Police Department at 212-694-7781. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. The music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!